ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, Liberation from the Illusory Energy, text number 36. Word meanings, na, cannot, etat, this, supreme truth, manaha, the mind, vishati, enter, vak, the function of speech, uta, nor, chakshuhu, sight, atma, intelligence, prana, the subtle airs supporting life, indriyani, the senses, cha or yata, just as, analam, a fire, archishaha, its sparks, swaha, om, shabdaha, the authoritative sound of the Vedas, api, even, bodhaka, being able to indicate by verbal reference, nishedataya, because of denying such, atma, of the supreme soul, mulam, basic evidence, artha uktam, expressed indirectly, aha, does express, yat rite, without which, supreme, na, there is not nishedha of the negative statements of scripture, siddhihi, ultimate purpose. Naitan mano vishati vaguta chakshuratma. Pranendriyani cha yatanalam archisha swa. Shabdo pi bodhaka nisheda tayatma mulam. Artoktam aha yadritena nisheda siddhi. Naitan mano vishati vaguta chakshuratma. Pranendriyani cha yatana lamarchisha swa. Shabdo pi bodhaka nisheda tayatma mulam. Artoktam aha yadrite na nishedha siddhi. Naitan mano vishati vaguta chakshuratma. Pranendriyani cha yatana lamarchisha swaha. Shabdo pi bodhaka nisheda tayatma mulam. Artoktam aha yadrite na nisheda siddhi. Artoktamaya-dhrite-kanishe-tu-siddhi.
Naitam mano visati gauta chakshuratma. Kaindriyam shayata namo archishasva. Sadhupi bodhaka nishedotayatma mulam. Ato samaj vrite Chakshuratma Anindriyani Chaitananam Archishasva Chandhopi Bodhaka Nishedatayatma Mulam. Artoktamaya vritena nusheva siddhi.
Translation. Neither the mind nor the faculties of speech, sight, intelligence, the life air, or any of the senses are capable of penetrating that supreme truth, any more than small sparks can affect the original fire from which they are generated. Not even the authoritative language of the Vedas can perfectly describe the supreme truth, since the Vedas themselves disclaim the possibility that the truth can be expressed by words. But through indirect reference, the Vedic sound does serve as evidence of the supreme truth, since without the existence of that supreme truth, the various restrictions found in the Vedas would have no ultimate purpose. Om Jnana Tivarantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha. This is a very long purport today. First, I entertained the idea of reading the whole thing, but it took me about 18 minutes, so I decided that might not be a good idea. So we'll just go through it, and I'll comment as we go along. This is some Vedanta philosophy we're going to be reading about today in the Upanishads. The small sparks generated by a blazing fire have no power to illuminate the original fire, nor can they burn it. The quantity of heat and light in the original fire is always superior to the quantity found in the insignificant sparks. Similarly, the minute living entity is generated from the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm not sure why they decided to use the word internal potency here. Generally, we'd say the marginal potency. In any case, the spiritual potency, The minute living entity is generated from the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Vedanta Sutra, Janmadyasya Yataha, and Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, Mamaivangsho Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. The minute living entities being Angshaha, or sparks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can never equal the Supreme Godhead in the quantity of their potency. The quantity of knowledge and bliss in the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always superior. Therefore, when a foolish conditioned soul tries to illuminate the subject matter of the highest truth with his tiny brain, he merely illuminates his own foolishness. The Personality of Godhead has personally spoken Bhagavad Gita, which is the blazing fire of perfect knowledge that burns to ashes the insignificant speculations and theories of so-called philosophers and scientists regarding the ultimate truth. Well, the points here are, in some ways, it almost summarizes everything. There's another major point, but this is an important part of it. The idea that, well, first of all, we learn here that we are sparks of the Absolute. We're made of the same thing that God is made of. This is a revolutionary idea, of course, in modern philosophy and theology. People don't understand this. They have some other conception of what the self is, what the soul is. So we have this very clear idea, actually, that we're made of the same stuff that God is made out of. We're part of Him, minute, infinitesimal. He is infinite, we are infinitesimal, but we're both spirit. But because we're tiny, we don't have the ability to understand Him on our own. But we can understand Him from Himself. He can reveal Himself to us. We have that power to accept His revelation. At least we have that much power. We can accept the revelation. That's stated in the Upanishads. Because logically one might think, well, that even that isn't possible. If we're so tiny, how can we understand God? Even if He shows Himself to us, He's so overwhelming and great, how can we understand Him? But the Upanishads tell us, no, you can understand. And Krishna also tells us in Bhagavad Gita, hear from Me, you will know Me in truth, free from doubt. This question also, what did the agnostics think? We can never know. It's impossible to know. That's their philosophy. But Krishna says, no, you can know. I can make you know. I can enlighten you. That possibility is there. The next paragraph here. The Supreme Personality of God is called Rishikesha, or the Lord of everyone's senses. Because the Personality of Godhead has supreme seeing power, hearing power, touching power, smelling power, and tasting power, the living entities, in a limited sense, can also see, hear, touch, smell, and taste by the mercy of Rishikesha. This is also an important point that's going to be carried through some of these other paragraphs in this purport. One thing, as we're seeing in these commentaries, what the commentators have done, as far as I understand, the way this was done, we're in the 11th canto, so this is right in the beginning, actually, of their work, the BBT team, because they started with the 11th canto before they went to the 10th canto. So the team was basically three people, Ridayananda Maharaj, Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, and Dravida Prabhu. So the main Sanskrit scholar was Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, although Ridayananda Maharaj also studied Sanskrit. He's also a Sanskrit scholar. But as I understand, the way they worked generally was Gopi Puranadana Prabhu would translate the commentaries of the Acharyas and possibly the verse itself. And then Ridayananda Maharaj was the one, at least at this stage, he was the one who was actually writing the purports. And Dravida Prabhu was the English editor. That's my understanding of how they work together. So what they're doing here is we can see there, because there are commentaries by various acharyas, so they're selecting from those acharyas and presenting their commentaries. And sometimes they give their names, or sometimes many of the acharyas repeat the same ideas, so they'll synthesize the idea and present it in their commentaries. So they were relying very heavily on the commentaries of the acharyas. Of course, Srila Prabhupada himself also did that. He read the acharyas' commentaries, and then he would present his own. He would give his purport, often based on the commentaries. Actually, if you ever read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita alongside Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary, you know, Prabhupada, he dedicated his Bhagavad Gita to Baladeva Vidyabhushana. And if you read Baladeva's along with Prabhupada, you can see why, because Prabhupada follows very, very closely. Most of the Sanskrit verses that Prabhupada quotes in Bhagavad Gita come from Baladeva's commentary. So this is the Vaishnava tradition, actually, to accept what the previous acharyas have handed down to us. So that's being done here. So many of these points. And sometimes the acharyas, the different acharyas who are making the comments, they often repeat the same point. So sometimes there's some repetition in these long purports. So this, we just read that the Lord, the personality of Godhead has senses. He has the power of hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and so on. And therefore the jivas also have this power because they're part of him. So continuing this purport, this idea is expressed in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. This is quite a common Upanishad that's quoted by the Vaishnavas. Jiva Goswami quotes it a lot in his Shatsandarbha. So this idea is expressed in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.18. Pranasya pranam uta chakshushas chakshur uta. You can probably see it. Pranasya pranam uta. So the prana, our prana comes from his prana, basically. Chakshusha chakshur uta shrotasya shrotram annasyanam manaso ye mano vidu. The Supreme Truth is understood to be the life air sustaining everyone's life air, the vision of everyone's eyes, the hearing power of the ear, and the sustenance of food itself. The obvious conclusion is that the Supreme Truth can be known by His own causes mercy and not by our foolish attempts to bring the all-pervading truth within the insignificant boundaries of our intelligence. Now, I found as I was going through this purport, there were a lot of transitions between sentences where I kind of got lost. So this is, I'm not sure how that previous verse leads to this conclusion. The obvious conclusion that the Supreme Truth can know by His own causeless mercy. It seems like the idea is that, well, His mercy is that we can hear, smell, see, taste, and so on. Those faculties that we have by which we can understand Him or understand anything, they come from Him. So they are His mercy. So that's the obvious conclusion. How could we know God? How could we think the mind is included here, the life air is included here? So we need all of those things to understand Him. So therefore, we're at His mercy. It's only by His mercy that we can understand something about Him. But it is stated in the Taittiriya Upanishad, another popular one. There's a whole story behind the Taittiriya Upanishad, kind of an interesting story. I won't get into it. Taittiriya means pigeons, but the pigeons, someone had the Vedas within them and they vomited the Vedas, and then the pigeons ate up the vomit. Titiri, partridges. And then there was some fighting going on between disciples of some guru. So this Taittiriya Upanishad comes from the vomit of some sages. But it was the Vedas. It was the Vedas that they had eaten and regurgitated. So there it said, this is a very famous verse, actually, the very, very famous line from the Taittiriya Upanishad. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. The descriptive power of speech, vacho, fails in the realm of the Supreme Truth. And the speculative power of the mind cannot achieve Him. So this is important because actually at the end of this, in the translation, you'll see it said in the translation that even the Vedas can't describe the absolute truth. But then it said, but there are negative statements in the Vedas and we can learn something from those negative statements. So this is a negative statement. When it says that the mind can't understand the truth or our words can't describe the absolute truth, it's actually telling us something. So this is going to be discussed here a little bit. So, let's see. But because such statements of Vedic Shrutis are in themselves descriptions of the Absolute Truth, one may consider such Vedic statements contradictory. In other words, they're saying you can't describe the truth, and they're describing the truth. Therefore, in this connection, it is stated, Shabdopi bodhaka nishedatayatma mulam arktoktam aha. This word was in our verse today, arktoktam. Arktoktam. Arktuktam. The ukta means to express. Arkta, or express indirectly. Arktuktam, expressed indirectly. Although the Vedic Shruti, Shabda, forbids us to speculate upon the Absolute Truth, such restrictive injunctions, now this is the word, this was also in this verse, it's nisheda. There are two things, nisheda and vidhi. Sarve vidhi nisheda shur etayori vakinkara. Where we say all the rules and regulations are support this one principle of always remembering Krishna. So in that verse, so we have nisheda and vidhi. So vidhi, just like pancharatrik vidhi, vidhi is usually tells us how to do something. Like the procedure of a ritual is called the vidhi. Do this, do that, touch your head, do this mudra, and so on. So that's vidhi. Nisheda is the negative, don't do this. So vidhi and nisheda, these go together. So the Upanishads have nisheda, which means negative statements, which means the Absolute Truth is not this, not that, neti neti. This is nisheda, this neti neti idea. So this is being discussed here. Let's see. In fact, the Vedic restrictions are meant to save one from the false path of mental speculation and ultimately bring one to the point of devotional surrender. As Lord Krishna himself states in Bhagavad Gita, Vedaischa sarvair aham eva vedyaha. By all Vedic literatures, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be known. The assertion that a particular process, such as mental speculation, is useless. So this is the verse that was, the line that was quoted above. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha, which again means the descriptive power of speech fails in the realm of the Supreme Truth and the speculative power of the mind cannot achieve him. So to say that particular processes such as mental speculation, well, let me just read this again. The assertion that a particular process such as mental speculation is useless constitutes an indirect assertion of the existence of the correct path of achieving the Supreme. As Srila Sridhar Swami has stated, sarvasya nishedhasya savaditvat. Every negative injunction is understood to have a specific limit. Negative injunctions cannot be taken as applicable in all cases. For example, a negative injunction is that no living entity can be equal to or greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, before we go on to this other part, I want to explain this idea again, that we learn something from negative statements. Example I read in one Bhanu Swami's footnote in one book I was reading of his, one of his commentaries, translations of one of the commentaries. He says, it's just like if you say, the sky is green, the sky is not green. So that's a negative statement. The sky is not green. So it's negative, the sky is not. But one thing you know is that, well, the sky is another color. Must be another, and there is a sky, and it's a different color. So it's not that you didn't learn anything from that negative statement. That's the idea that's being presented here. You learn something, you know that there's a sky, and you know that it's not blue, I mean it's not green, it's some other color. Right? So that's the idea. These negative statements are actually teaching us something, even though they're negative, they're stating something in a negative way. So Sridhar Swami is saying that they have limits. Well, there's a limit to the statement, the sky is not green. Okay, that tells me something, but there must be more. It's not giving me unlimited knowledge about the sky, obviously. So here it says, but Srimad Bhagavatam clearly states that because of the intense love, so it said here, no living entity can be equal to or greater than Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's a negative. So then, but the Srimad Bhagavatam clearly states that because of the intense love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna, they sometimes assume a superior position. So So in other words, there are also limits to that negative statement. No one is equal to or greater than God. Well, actually, in Krishna's Leela, we see something different. This is, of course, very pertinent now. We're studying Damodar Leela. So that we see it manifest so clearly through Mother Yashoda. Thus, Mother Yashoda binds Krishna with ropes, and the influential cowherd boys sometimes ride on the shoulders of Krishna or defeat him in wrestling. Negative injunctions, therefore, may sometimes be adjusted according to the transcendental situation. So this, now may I pause on this point a little bit, the Damodar Leela, because it shows this idea how God is, he's refuting the statements of the Upanishads. He's proving that they're false, or at least that they're limited. It doesn't say everything. We find this often in our philosophy. We have some statement, and you think, oh, it's a very definitive statement. But then, in some other place, you'll find something that says something, it says something different. God is great. He's the greatest. No one is greater. We were just hearing in the reading, Brahman means the greatest. So if he's the greatest, why is he afraid of his mother? How is that possible? So because our theology, I was discussing this with some devotees yesterday, our understanding of God, it would be nice if some intellectual would write a book about our theology, just focusing on what is our picture of God. How do we explain God? So this idea that God is subordinate to his devotees is a revolutionary idea. It's an amazing idea. This pastime is so sweet, the Damodar Leela. I've been listening to tapes of Sri Ramaswamy discussing his book. He just came out with a book on Damodar Leela. So there's so many insights from our acharyas. One of the things that they say, the acharyas, they emphatically say, don't think that Krishna is just, this is just, that he's thinking I'm God and I'm just going to pretend that I'm a little boy. No, he thinks he's a little boy. The Leela Shakti, you could say, kind of covers him over. Or Sankalpa Shakti, there's also called Sankalpa Shakti, which means it fulfills his desires. So he wants to be in that mood, so he actually enters into it, and he's afraid. He's not faking it, he's actually afraid. For the first time, his mother has picked up a stick, and he is so afraid, he doesn't know what's going to happen. There's all these sweet things in this Leela. There's one, I mentioned some devotees yesterday, that Krishna, he's hiding from his mother. Of course, Krishna has just woken up, so he hasn't eaten anything yet, so he's hungry. So he just starts to eat. His mother is giving him some breast milk, and then she puts him down and goes running after the milk. So he's very angry. I'm starving here. Why did you leave me like this? So, of course, he gets upset. Well, she's gone. And then there's this whole time thing that goes on. Mother Yashoda is gone very briefly, but in those few moments, Krishna does all this stuff. He goes into the storage where all the pots are hanging and basically destroys the place. He breaks the pot of yogurt and smears all over the place, and he feeds it to the monkeys. And we learn that the monkeys are actually Ramchandra's monkeys. Because they had to follow certain rules when they were in Ram's Leela. But Krishna said, well, next time you come, you can just play and have fun and eat all you want. So he's feeding the monkeys all this yogurt, and of course Krishna is putting it all over the place. And then, of course, now he's sitting there, he's eating himself, and he has his back to the door where Mother Yashoda is going to come out of. He's in the courtyard, and he's eating, and Mother Yashoda sneaks up to him, and then he sees she's coming, and she has a stick in her hand, and he's so afraid. He starts running and running and running. And Mother Yashoda, we hear in the Bhagavatam now, she has a female figure and she can't run as fast as little Krishna. At this point, Krishna is 3 years, 4 months old. That's how old he was. And we're told by the acharyas that Krishna, he matures at a rate of 1.5. So he's like 5 years old. He acts like it. He has the brain of a 5 year old. Because his mother's always thinking, this boy is too smart. But anyway, I was leading up, there's all these little side stories and involved in this. I wanted to get the book, but to get it from Europe costs $80. So not quite ready to get it yet. It's the only way you can get it. But that Sri Ramaswamy, he's explaining some of the things from the book. So one of the things that happens is that the mortar, they have the grinding mortar. We have the picture of it. So at the top of it, of course, it's concave. And it's turned upside down generally during the day.
because, well, there were birds come and pass stool in it and so on. They want to keep it clean, so they turned it upside down. So it wasn't being used, so it was turned upside down. So Krishna's going and he's hiding. Apparently he's on the top, I think. But anyway, he's hiding on this mortar, and he wants to, really, now he wants to hide from his mother. And so he's thinking, how can I hide? I have to hide someplace. So he sits down in yoga position, and he starts meditating, because he knows that what the yogis do to get anima siddhi, make themselves smaller than the smallest. So he starts practicing anima siddhi, and he knows how to do it, but it's not working. So he gets very disturbed and frustrated. What's going on here? I saw these yogis do it, but it's not working for me. So he gets caught, and you know, his mother keeps chasing him. And then, of course, there's a whole story about the ropes. And the rope that Mother Yashoda, the first one that she uses to tie him, is the one that she has in her hair. A nice silk rope with some gold filament in it and so on. So she takes that out of the braid in her hair, and she starts tying him. And then, of course, eventually she gathers up all the... The whole time, of course, Krishna, he's really afraid, especially when she has the stick. He's really afraid of that stick. My mother is angry before, but she never brought a stick with her. And that stick is Nanda Maharaj's walking stick. And, of course, he doesn't just have one. He's the king. He's got a whole bunch of walking sticks. So, and you can imagine it probably has gold and diamonds and rubies and all kinds of things. So that's the stick he's being chased with. And the stick, of course, is a person. Everything is a person. The rope is a person, the mortar is a person, the stick is a person. And their desires are also all involved in all of these things. So here we're hearing how you can't understand God with your speculation. So you know, who's going to come up with this? These kinds of ideas. And Krishna, as I was saying, one of the statements the acharyas used to show that Krishna was actually afraid is in Kunti's prayers, where she says that, I can't understand this. What is the word that she uses? Huh? No, but what does she say? She says that this disturbs me or something. What is the, she says, I forget what the word is. She says that this remembrance disturbs me or something like that. I can't understand how you're the absolute truth and you're afraid of Mother Yashoda. So the acharyas say, well, Krishna is actually afraid. Otherwise, Kunti Devi wouldn't say this. She's saying that actually he's afraid. So here's, and at that moment, now Krishna, of course, he can really focus if he wants to. He's God. So he's in samadhi on this stick at this moment. He's focused on this stick. So, but the whole universe has to go on. He has to direct that upadrashtu namanta. He's in our hearts. He has to fulfill all of our desires. But he's pinpoint right now, focused on the stick. But that's God. He does that, and he's reigning over Vaikuntha, and he's in everybody's heart, and he's doing all of the things at the same time. And he can be conscious and unconscious at the same time. One point that Jiva Goswami often makes is that Krishna has a chintya shakti, and these shaktis can do the impossible. Not only inconceivable, but the impossible. We can't, our minds can't accommodate that. Just like I think in one of the primary in Aristotle's philosophy is, what's the term? I forget what the term is, but it's basically A is A. The identity of something like that. The law of identity, I think it's called. So A is A, something like that. But with Krishna, A is not necessarily A. Even the basic laws of logic, he can supersede those with his powers. So this, of course, is, you know, just this very idea that Krishna is completely absorbed. He's the supreme absolute truth. Everything depends on him. Everything comes from him. Nothing's going to happen without him. But now he's afraid. He's shaking in fear. And he's just staring at this stick. And the tears are coming from his eyes. And the mascara is running and so on. But at the same time, everything is going on. At the same time, he's conscious of all of the other things. He has to be. So he's not limited like we are. So this is the basic point that's being made here from the Upanishads. And of course, the Upanishads, the condensed meaning of the Upanishads is in the Vedanta Sutra, and the Vedanta Sutra is explained or elaborated, expanded through Srimad Bhagavatam. So actually what the Bhagavatam is doing is explaining the Upanishads. You get right down to it. These basic seeds of ideas that are presented there about God, there we get the full idea, the full expression of these things. So when you, some negative thing is some, getting back to this idea of nishedha, negative statements, when some negative statement is given about God, that's not the end of the story. In the Bhagavatam, we find the positive side, the full positive side, the full explanation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this purport goes on, many more pages, but that's a few points about that. I'll just read the translation again. Neither the mind nor the faculties of speech, sight, intelligence, the life air, or any of the senses are capable of penetrating that supreme truth any more than small sparks can affect the original fire from which they are generated. Not even the authoritative language of the Vedas can perfectly describe the supreme truth. So this word is of course significant here, perfectly described. Not even the authoritative language of the Vedas can perfectly describe the supreme truth. Since the Vedas themselves disclaim the possibility that the truth can be expressed by words. But through indirect reference, the Vedic sound does serve as evidence of the supreme truth, since without the existence of that supreme truth, the various restrictions found in the Vedas would have no ultimate purpose. So any discussion? Actually, this purport had some real brain teasers in it. I didn't get that far. You won't have to hear how I was struggling over them. Yes, Hari Parayana Prabhu.
So I was reminded of Bhishma Dev in Bhishma's pastime, where he's lying on the bed of arrows. And he's trying to convince Yudhishthir that he shouldn't lament. This is all Krishna's plan. But then ultimately he says this famous verse, Nahi karhichit rajan puman vedha viditsitam yad jidnyasaya yukta muhyanti kavayopihi. That karhichit nahi, it is never possible, it will never be possible, he's saying to Yudhishthir, to understand why Krishna does anything. It's not possible for us. And he is a pure devotee, both of them. Mm-hmm. And if we try to understand, we'll be bewildered. Yet jidnyasaya yukta muyanti, they are bewildered. All the sages who have tried in the past will not be able to. Therefore, the next verse says, we should just follow his instructions. And Krishna's instruction to Yudhishthir before this pastime was to stop lamenting and be the king. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bhagavad Gita, do we understand it? Well, Prabhupada gave us instructions based on the Gita that we should understand and follow.
Yeah, that's a really nice example. Because Yudhishthir, he was so overwhelmed with lamentation that nobody could get him out of it. They were trying to give him good reasons and so on, but no one could get him out of it. Even Krishna tried to preach to him, it didn't work. So Krishna brought him to Bhishma Dev to settle him down, let's say, to ease his mind so he could carry on his duties. So this is one of the things Bhishma Dev said, you can't figure everything out. You can't just think, oh, if only this, if only that. And of course he was dealing with Krishna's material energy, and I'd say, even trying to figure that out, you'll be bewildered. That Lord, this comes, of course, in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, also. This Krishna's material energy bewilders us. Cool.
Sorry. I had a question about the Damodar pastimes you were discussing. How the mascara is running and it's gotten on the back of his fists. How he's afraid, but it also describes that his cheeks are reddened by Mother Yashoda's kisses. Mm. So I'm wondering, did she shower him with kisses when she first caught him? After she bound him to calm him down? Or were those kisses that came when she was feeding him?
I'm sure as soon as she saw him in the morning. See, what was she? Actually, she was so absorbed, it took a moment. See, Krishna was standing there waiting for her because he came out and he's hungry. She's churning away, what is she doing? Actually, this is another point. Shivaram Maharaj was explaining, the acharyas explained, because she's in samadhi on Krishna, because she's always singing songs about Krishna's pastimes. So she's The whole spiritual world is in her meditation, basically, and Krishna is there. So Krishna has woke up, and Krishna's kind of, he's bewildered because, wait, am I here or am I there? My mother's meditation. Because it's her mother, the mother's meditation is so real, it's truth. So he's sort of stuck halfway in suspended animation between these two places. So Krishna comes and stands before her, but she's so absorbed in her meditation that she doesn't respond right away to him. So what does he do? She's churning. You know how the rod is into the pot of the yogurt, and she pulls on the rope back and forth to stir it. So he grabs onto the rod, stop the rod from moving, so that'll get her attention. She can't, all of a sudden, churning stops. So that's how he gets her attention. So you can imagine at that point she picks him up and kisses him and nurses him and so on. So it's such a sweet, sweet pastime. I was thinking for me, it's easier for me to listen to something like this than to listen to the Madhurya Rasa. Because actually later on in this purport it describes how when we hear that Krishna's blue, then we, or other things about the spiritual world, even in our meditation, what we're doing is we're actually thinking of the things in this world. And so when we think blue that we know. But Krishna's not that. Krishna's Shyama, or everything in the spiritual world, is actually a different thing. So when I think of Krishna and the gopis, well, I kind of think of men and women. That's just natural while you're in this state of consciousness. So to hear about the mother and her baby child, then I feel like I'm safer ground when I hear that. It's just such nectar to hear about Krishna's Leela with his mother. That exchange is so sweet, so endearing. It brings out emotion. That's what we want, don't we? We want to have some bhava, we want to have some feeling, feel some emotion toward Krishna. So this Damodar Leela is so nice for that. And it comes out, of course, every day we say the prayer. It's such a nice prayer, the translation so sweet. So over here, Raghavendra.
Prabhu, you mentioned the word, theology, and I'm thinking, is it correct to say that short of the information that Prabhupada has given us about God, that any university course on theology is really just speculation? Is it not?
Well, not necessarily. It's all speculation because they also present the scriptures of those religions, so that's God's revelation. They may present Bhagavad Gita, even Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, when you get into higher levels, Indologists, they study various scriptures. They may study Srimad Bhagavatam even. But of course, they don't present it as a truth.
Right, mythology.
Yeah. Well, they may not necessarily present it as mythology. They say this is what these religions believe. I'm always reminded there's that one video of Prabhupada talking to scholars in L.A. And a Professor Judah, he's responding to something Prabhupada said. And he says, yes, I think you're right that we know about God, but we don't know God. So that's a nice way to state it. So they know about God, even, theologians, as Prabhupada would call them. They may even know something about God in theory, whether they believe or not, that that some do and some don't, probably. But of course, we're trying to not just know about God, but to actually know God in person, have that actual experience of God. Yes, Guru Prasad, Prabhu.
When you hear these stories like this Damodar Leela, there's one level you hear it, like a simple story, Mother Yashoda, Father Krishna. But then there's always like layers and layers, like each little section, there's like so many layers there.
Yeah.
It's amazing and it's really sweet. And it, like the gopis, they did not understand that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We hear that all the time. But when they were separated from Krishna and they were lamenting, one point they said, we understand that you are not the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it seems like that knowledge is there, it's buried, but it comes up at a certain time. Is that
yeah. Whatever the Leela requires, it comes and goes sometimes. But it's the way Prabhupada would put it, it didn't matter. One day, Shiva Ramaswamy, the way he said it, I heard in this one, he says, they love Krishna not because of what he is, God, but of who he is. I thought that was a nice way of expressing it. So they love Krishna because of Krishna, the person. So similarly with the gopis, what he is, if he's God, well, he may be God, that's irrelevant. That's basically the idea. That whether he's God or not, that's irrelevant. We love Krishna because he's Krishna. When he plays his flute, that's it. We're goners. I think that's basically the idea. So sometimes it comes out, it's true, they call him Hari and they come with various names of God, the Supreme Person, and even refer to him as God. But then the next moment, that doesn't matter. You know, it's just part of their relationship.
Do they forget, or like you said, whatever the Leela requires?
Yeah.
So, I mean, forget it for the next...
What's that?
I mean, after they say that you're the Supreme Personality of God, all this, so the next pastime, if they don't require that, it doesn't come up?
That's the idea. They're in a different mood. Their moods also change. They can be contradictory. Even we ourselves, actually, they do polls of people, and you see how people believe completely contradictory things. You get right down to it. So what to speak of in relationship? Krishna's great devotees, they can express contradictory feelings and so on. It's all part of the mix. It's all part of the nectar. Just like, you know, sometimes we like to have salty. When you have a feast and the salty gets mixed in with the sweet, I'm saying, hey, that tastes pretty good, actually. So it's all the mixing of the tastes of flavors to get new flavor. You can never get away from the mic. Off the mic.
So just in regard to the last question from Mataji, in Priti Sandarbha in chapter 8, Jiva Goswami gives a whole list of what is the reason for some prayers to be contradictory. So he mentions that like this prayer, Nakula Gopika Nandana Bhava, this prayer that you're talking about in Gopi Gita, saying the gopis not saying that Krishna is God, they're saying that how is it possible that you appeared from Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, who both were so, so compassionate, and even their parents. Varista Gopi was Mother Yashoda's mother, and Harjani was Nanda Maharaj's father. They were all so compassionate. How is it possible that now you're acting so indifferent? Akila Dehinam Antra Atmadrik. You're acting like you're the super soul, like you're God, like you're just being indifferent. How are you acting like this? We don't believe you could have come from parents like Nanda and Yashoda. So this is their mood and saying. Because when Gargamuni came to do the naming ceremony, he mentioned, Tasam Nanda Atma Jo Yamte Narayana Samaguna. Because your child is so special, he has qualities, Samaguna, like Narayana. So on the words of Gargacharya, it became a running joke in Vrindavan, that Krishna is like God. But they don't actually believe, because if they believe that he's Bhagavan, then their love would be impeded. Mahaprabhu directly said, Aishwarya Janite Sakala Jagat Karamol Mashit, Aishwarya Shuddhati Prem Nahimurti. That if Aishwarya will come in your love, it'll make your love go down. So in Gopi Gita, their love is going up. It would not be possible. So they're expressing, you cannot be the son of Maharaj Nanda and Yashoda because you're being so indifferent to us at this great time of need. So this is called Vyanjan Vritti. It's a whole science of how to say something, not sarcastically necessarily, but to say something with a different intention. Double meaning. Yes, exactly.
So anyone else? All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.